They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, I'm Sue Bartholomew, and today, boy, do I have a sweetheart deal for you. We've got two guests on today. First, we're going to be talking to Fred Fisher from Arizona, and later on, we're going to go to Jill Schweitzer. These two people have done a yeoman's job of trying to put together a paper, and the paper is called the Arizona CID Homeowner Institute. It's a report. It's a two-parter. It talks a little bit about differences, the fact that there are no choices, and an alternative to how we can actually get something accomplished, the same thing accomplished, without going to other extremes. And then we'll talk a little bit about one of the biggest scams on earth, which is protect property values. But we'll wait until Jill joins us to handle that. Fred, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sue, and greetings from the Valley of the Sun.
And where it's absolutely sunny and warm, and I'm jealous as all hell because it's not, it's cold and miserable here. But anyway, Fred, you've been writing to me for a long time, and you've been telling me about PKIDs and MIDs, and you've been discussing private and and public property maintenance. What are you talking about?
To put it in the simplest form, they're an alternative to privatized housing. And this alternate form of housing has been allowed for a long time, and at least here in Arizona, it's been part of the statutory part of the state. But the local municipalities have basically wrote them out of their zoning policies, so they've not been able to be built. And that's what I'm most stewed about, because there is a better alternative to privatized housing. As you know, recently myself and Jill Schweitzer have teamed up and lobbied the Arizona legislature to propose some planned community reforms on behalf of the members. And one of those reforms was to allow the developers for the first time in decades the option of simply building single-family housing under improvement district public management control. Now, these improvement districts sometimes are also called special districts, and the local municipalities call them under different names. The town of Gilbert calls them PKIDs, which stands for Parkway Improvement Districts, and the city of Peoria calls them MIDs, which are Maintenance Improvement Districts. But they're all the same thing. They're improvement districts. And
what are they improving, Fred? Tell us.
Well, they are dedicated to maintaining, owning and maintaining one specific thing. As an example, in our neighborhood in Gilbert, when we had an HOA, we had a light pole district. And what that did was, as part of your property taxes, there was a line item called the light pole district. And that was an improvement district. And what that did was it paid for the ownership and maintenance of the street lights within the neighborhood. And they use these districts here in the valley to own and maintain a lot of different things. In the case of housing, also, what Gilbert did, they used these same districts to, back in the 80s, to take care of the open spaces and landscape spaces and the street rights of ways and the improvements within some neighborhoods. And they called them, well, initially they called them land maintenance improvement districts, and later they changed the name to parkway improvement districts. But what happened was they did not, these neighborhoods, there's over 10 of them, did not have and were not under HOA control. Instead, they were under public control through these improvement districts, or the PKID. And when the builder would build the neighborhoods, he would turn over these common areas and all these other areas over to the municipality. Just like in the common interest developments, the developer turns it over to the HOA to own after that point. And but in the case of the PKIDs, the open spaces, the retention basins, and the improvements, you know, the little basketball courts and play areas, they're within that one neighborhood are owned by the municipalities, and they're maintained by them, and they charge a tax for this district, and that money pays for the maintenance of all these areas. And that's the difference. There's no HOA involved. There's no loss of property rights, no loss of state homestead exemption, and all the other things that come with the private entities like the other neighborhoods.
So when did they start building these PKIDs? Because I lived in Arizona, and I don't remember them. We did not have an HOA.
These were built, and they started building these approximately in the mid-1980s.
Okay.
And Gilbert at the time, as you remember, was primarily just a farm community.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, there was only like one or two HOAs in the whole municipality. And most of the housing back then that was built was these neighborhoods with the PKID management. And unfortunately, what happened, Mayor Berman was on your show back in 2004, and he explained what happened with the implementation of the neighborhoods. Unfortunately, they had built a bunch of these, and due to some factors such as the developers not informing the buyers very well and the local municipality, Maricopa County was tasked with charging the tax for these neighborhoods through the property taxes. Well, for some weird unknown reason, Maricopa County did not initially start charging this tax. So Gilbert had built, by this time, over the course of 4 years, close to 10 or a little over 10 of these developments, and suddenly one day the county mailed out these large past due property tax bills for these neighborhoods amounting to thousands and thousands of dollars. And you can imagine the residents in those neighborhoods went ballistic because they were not expecting this, and which was unfortunate. And that kind of caused some problems with Gilbert because they didn't know what to do, and the residents had gone to the legislature, and the legislature changed the statute and changed the voting standard to disillusion these kind of districts. And it's interesting, when Jill and I were at the legislature, some of the legislatures were being told that the reason why they no longer build these neighborhoods under improvement district control is because they're not allowed to have reserve funding, and that unfortunately is just not true. Gilbert, if you go into the town records going back at that time, you'll read that. In fact, I can read it to you here. The reason why the town quit building these things after that basically snafu is because the council was afraid, because of the voting standard, that in the future the residents would vote these neighborhoods or disillusion these PKIDs, and then they would be stuck with having to pay for the maintenance of all these open spaces. And that's why Gilbert stopped building them. What they should have done, and they could have done is they should have just put a moratorium on them for a few years to work out the details. Because since then, they've obviously worked out the details because all of these developments are still here, and they're doing quite well.
So, Fred, let me cut you off a little bit and take you back so that we have a clearer understanding of what the deal is. They started building these, and the county just neglected to collect the money for a while.
For the first 4 years, yes.
And then they decided they wanted to catch up and get reimbursed for the amount, the things that they had spent. Now, when I lived in Arizona and I lived in Mesa, just, you know, right on the southern end of Mesa, almost in Gilbert, we didn't have anything.
We didn't have anything
at all. And property values, I mean, our house doubled in value in five years, however long we had it. And we didn't have these problems. We didn't have these issues. The city collected the trash. We had street lights. They owned and maintained the streets and the sidewalks. And what was really nice and something that I've never seen here is that when they came around and collected the trash twice a week, they came around with street sweepers and cleaned up the streets afterwards. So, I mean, people coming from the east used to complain that the streets were too clean, you could eat off them.
Yeah.
But all of that was taken care of in our tax dollars.
And that's the change, as you know, back when municipalities back in the 60s started this privatization trend, and a lot of that changed, per se. But which is a shame, because the PKIDs as a housing concept work just fine. And the fact that they're still here today, decades later, proves that. And they've done quite well in Gilbert. You know, although in one sense I criticize them because they no longer allow them to be built, which is ironic because they're an excellent alternative to housing associations. And one of the things, as I said, we learned when we were at the legislature is, for instance, one of the legislators was told by the building association that the special districts or improvement districts already allow many different services to be, you know, done, including the maintenance of these open areas. And although that's true, it's only partially true. Statutorily, Arizona allows that alternate form of management of these areas, but the problem is the municipalities, the local ones, don't allow it in their zoning. In fact, I've got a note from Gilbert's own top planning department that said a neighborhood with or without a PAD, which is the zoning classification where they put these neighborhoods, is required to have an HOA.
What's a PAD? What does a PAD?
Well, they call them a planned area development.
A planned area development.
Yeah. See, when you look at these zoning codes, they don't always use the word homeowner association.
Right.
They have to classify them, and HOAs are classified in zoning usually under PADs or PUDs, planned unit developments, and they're usually part of what's called an overlay zoning district. The way they do the zoning codes, they have a basic zoning code like a subdivision, and then they have another code later on that's an overlay district, and it's in that overlay district where they actually have the requirements to create a housing association. Per se.
And so, all right, now, again, I'm going to go back to where I lived in Mesa. We didn't have anything. We didn't have open spaces. Any open space was privately owned. It was part of, if it wasn't the street or the sidewalk, it was owned by whoever owned that lot.
Well, that started changing in 1977 with the Federal Clean Water Act, because it required water runoff from rain to be retained on site, And that kind of changed the design of neighborhoods after that point.
Yeah, but you know what, Fred? We had the land in those days to absorb the water. Mm-hmm. Then they started increasing density, which...
Yes, and that makes a difference.
And that's what caused it. And now they've got Fairfax County. Now they've got this permeable asphalt.
Mm-hmm. I remember you talking about that, yes.
And the county is mandating that developers use them because they don't think they've got the longevity, which means that they're testing them out on the homeowners and in an association. If the damn thing collapses and just doesn't last for 2 years, it's the homeowners who are going to have to foot the bill to replace that.
See, that's one of the downsides of common interest development form of housing, because the zoning allows the lots to be very small. And the smaller you make the lot, obviously, the less of that open area for the water to run and soak into. So a lot of the water in these small lots, because of the zoning, has to run off somewhere. So typically they design the neighborhood's engineering to run off into the streets, and then from the streets it ends up into these retention basins. And that's generally how most of the neighborhoods here in the valley are designed anymore. So that has a big impact on it. And also, too, the municipalities, as part of their master plans, require open spaces because they put some recreational things in there, you know, basketball courts and tot lots. So they want that also. So that increases this large piece of land that somebody has to own and maintain. And part one of the reports clearly points that out, that there's two ways of doing it. You either have to own and maintain those open spaces, you know, street rights of ways that are not part of the individual owner's lot. You either have to maintain them through some kind of a private entity or a public entity. And as we both know, since the 60s, municipalities overall have moved and privatized and chosen and wrote their codes to say that when you build single-family housing, most often you're going to have these areas under the control and ownership of these private HOAs.
Tell me something, Fred. These PKIDs or the MIDs or, you know, whatever you want to call them, is the housing in densely built, or is there a little bit more elbow room?
They look just like an HOA. They use the same subdivision zoning, the size of the lots. It's all basically the same. The only difference is those retention basins, open spaces, the street rights of way, all those areas are owned by the municipality and maintained by the municipality through these improvement districts. That's the only big difference between the two, with one other exception. The neighborhoods under the control of the PKIDs do not have HOAs. They still have CC&Rs, just like the people across the street that live in an HOA, but there is no HOA entity in that neighborhood to enforce those. If you live in one of these PKIDs and you have a big issue with a CC&R with your neighbor, then you have to take your neighbor to small claims court or to whatever appropriate court to deal with it. That is the one of the differences. But other than that, architecturally, the neighborhoods are built under the same basic, you know, standards in the same lot sizes as the neighborhood that's under HOA control.
So there's something else that's occurring to me right now. I mean, as you might imagine, I hear from a lot of people with all of their stories. Sometimes they want to talk about them. Sometimes they don't want to come on and talk about them. But quite often, there's not that arm's length sort of management maintenance issues that you tend to have when the county's more involved.
Yeah.
Than if the neighbor was involved with it. So if I lived next door to you and I was on the board and I decided, hey, Fred, I really don't like you. You're a pain in the neck. You keep talking about all these PKIDs and you're undermining my authority. So I'm going to go after you, but I can go after you using one of your friends and neighbors' funds.
That's right, and that is one of the differences between the two. When you live in a neighborhood that's privatized and there's an issue with a CC&R, that violation may only be basically affecting your neighbor, but under the umbrella of an association, the board uses the funds from your neighbors at the other end of the neighborhood that it's not affecting to use it against you to get you to conform to the CC&R. So that's kind of unfair to the person at the other end of the neighborhood because it's not affecting him.
So if it's
he's paying for it.
Yeah, but I mean, it could also be a vendetta, a personal vendetta.
Oh,
I
yes.
might have an agenda. And
yes, and that does happen, and it's happened to, I know Jill, and it's happened to me, so I know it can happen.
So, all right, so then this would sort of take away that intimate
yes.
personal relationship because you're dealing with a county, you're dealing with people who are not in the neighborhood and are
right.
not involved.
They don't live there, they don't have a personal stake. They can be more neutral because they are that way. And also, when you're dealing with your neighbor, you have to go through the municipal process of dealing with the CC&R. And as you know, most municipalities have got codes that deal with nuisance and all kinds of other issues, and they have a system where they have a court that you go to, and guess who's hearing your case? It's a judge, a neutral party. That's something you don't have when you're dealing with these issues in a privatized neighborhood. The person that you have to deal with is your board. And what that's called technically is privatized justice, because that board member is the one that accuses you, that hears your case, and divvies out the punishment. It's all in one. So you're not really getting justice that way because it's privatized. And you lose that under a privatized scheme compared to a municipal where you go and see a neutral party.
Okay, and one thing we did not do at the beginning of the show, and I want to do it now before we get too much further away from this, is this paper that or this report. It's a two-parter,
right.
And it's one that you and Jill have been working on, and you guys have done an amazing job with this, and it's still in the draft form. It's not quite available for prime time yet, so I do appreciate the fact that you guys sent it to me and are allowing me to talk about it. But you had two different objectives for this. One is educational and the other is lobbying. Tell me a little bit about how you want to use this paper. And is it only for Arizona, or is this something that we can use on a national basis?
Well, in general, although it's fine-tuned for Arizona because the improvement districts are here in Arizona are not only in statute, but they work differently than, let's say, an improvement district in Florida. So in different states, you might have similar statutes about special districts or improvement districts, but they may be set up a little differently. But this report was originally created primarily to educate and advocate Arizona legislators, but the information in a lot of ways is universal and applies to the entire nation. The first part of the report is basically a history of these of why we have common interest developments today, which is simply through government intervention when they started supporting insurance for condominiums and neighborhoods that had HOAs. And then, as you know, everything started evolving after that point, and then local municipalities started to get involved, and they realized that they could avoid a lot of the cost of infrastructure and maintenance by transferring these costs from the general fund right to the developer, and then of course the developer passes these costs on to the home buyers. This all started from.
Along with all this privatized nonsense, I mean, there's one thing that you have not really focused on or made a big deal that I think you should, and that is that the privatized thing has generated a $65 billion.
Oh, yeah.
you know, that's the industry. But there's something that you talk about. I mean, there's so many good points in this paper, Fred, that, you know, I really hope that you keep working on it and keep developing it and do something for the national.
We are.
I know you are. I know you guys are really working hard on this. But you said there's no unlimited liability that, you know, if you go away from the privatized management to sort of more of a public, there's no unlimited liability that you have in an HOA, no fear of coming home or of being fined or the loss of your state homestead protection,
yeah.
No creation of more and more and more rules annually,
yeah.
No fourth level of government, no loss of constitutional rights of speech other than the right and the controlled use and enjoyment over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Where have I heard that before?
Yeah, there's a few of your quotes throughout this report because they are true and they are accurate and they are so right. And that's why I use them and I put your name on them because they are correct. And that is something, too. The people that live in these neighborhoods under improvement district, all of that stuff goes away. They have their homestead exemptions that they get to keep. They don't have this dilemma of a board that can do and has all these powers, and on and on and on. I mean, it's so different, and they don't have the economic impacts. They don't have the social impacts. Speaking of social impacts, your recent guest, Mr. Solomon, with the announcement of his new HOA Crisis in America findings, that's a good example there, too. A lot of those impacts don't exist in the neighborhoods that are under the public management because you don't have this privatized board of people that have all these powers. And that makes a huge difference, not only financially, but also socially. So there's a big difference in the two. And one of the interesting things, and one of the things I try to get across in the report, and I've got this in several places, there is no imaginable, reasonable reason why today in the state of Arizona, the municipalities and the counties cannot and should not again allow neighborhoods to be built under public management with a few exceptions. And those exceptions are, obviously, when you have a neighborhood that has private streets or gated streets, air parks, perhaps, large lakes, clubhouses. And my reasoning there is most municipalities don't want to be owners and operators of those kind of complex and expensive, you know, improvements. And I understand that. But when you're talking about what I call a standard working man's neighborhood that just has the open spaces, retention basins, street whites away, tot lots, there's no reason why those types of housing cannot be under public management like they used to be a long time ago.
Okay, I want to throw something because we're running out of time. We're going to get
okay.
Joe on. I want to throw something at you because as you continue working on this, I want to give you an idea. Gated communities, people think that this is going to protect them somehow. They're safer.
No, they're not.
They're
huge liabilities.
They're not safer. You're not any safer in a gated community or a gated gulag or whatever you want to call it than you are just on the plain Jane Street address. But the other thing, Fred, we talk about privatized and we talk about all of these assets. There's no reason on earth why you cannot build a development with all of these assets, swimming pools, clubhouses, all of that, and make it private, really private. Swimming pools can be off the deep end. Tennis courts can be, Love 20, whatever, you know. But they can be owned, and you don't, if you want to belong, you can.
Yeah.
And I
can give you an example of that. The neighborhood that I grew up in back in Ohio back in the early 60s, it did not have a housing association, but in the middle of the neighborhood was a swimming pool. And that swimming pool was a private entity. And the original owners to that neighborhood were given stock in that swimming pool. But if you wanted to sell your stock to anybody, you could, you know. So there was a swimming pool there privately owned, but anybody could buy or sell into it.
Paid dues and join. You can pay dues
for
summer, but you don't have to risk your house because
it's being run by
someone who doesn't know what they're doing.
Absolutely gone
off the deep end. Fred, thank you so much. I know there's a lot more here, and half an hour just didn't do it, so I hope you'll come back.
Oh, I'll be glad to. One of the main things that Jill and I were simply trying to advocate for is give people a choice. For those people who want to live in under this kind of a control, fine, then planned communities are best. But for the rest of us who don't want to live under this kind of a housing control privatized housing, then allow the developers to build neighborhoods under public control, under these PPIDs.
Thank you, Fred. Joining us on the Commons right now is Jill Schweitzer. And we told you about Jill during the first half of the show. Jill has been working with Fred and doing a lot of work and trying to debunk some of the nonsense we keep hearing about HOAs. Jill is a broker, an associate broker with RE/MAX in Arizona. And so she has access to data that most of us don't have and can really put a spin on, you know, put a different spin on what we hear. Jill, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Sue. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Jill. You have been talking about looking at HOAs and non-HOA housing, and you sent me an email and you said there is a need for non-HOA housing. This coming from an agent, when a lot of people think that realtors really like these things. And you also told me that no buyer ever said, I want an HOA. Some actually tell you they don't want an HOA. So what do you tell them? Do you have an option? Do you have anything you can show them?
For newer homes, no. So if they want to buy a house without an HOA, they have to buy an older home. Otherwise, a lot of times they end up just settling for a house in an HOA because they want the newer home.
So would the PKIDs and MIDs, I mean, these are not being built anymore? Or are these all older homes?
They were built, most of them were built in the early to mid-90s, and they're not building them anymore.
And you think they should?
I think it would be great if buyers had the option of that. And we're adults, so I think that we don't necessarily need someone telling us how many trees and plants to have in our front yard.
What an idea. What a concept. We're actually adults. People are giving us mortgages, and we're adults, and so we should be able to decide how many trees we have. Jill, this is crazy. You're suggesting that we don't need to be told all this.
Right, and I seriously doubt that people buying a brand new home for $300,000 or $400,000 are going to come into the community, paint their house pink, and put a bunch of junk in their front yard.
You've done some research, and you've looked at, I mean, you've got oodles and oodles of data here. Tell me a little bit about it. What have you discovered? What have you been doing? What's been your share of doing this?
Well, the first thing I'll say is I did not know what PKIDs were until Fred told me about them. When I started looking at them and we got the idea to kind of compare the cost and also the values, I went into the computer and I thought, okay, find the PKID properties, find any recent sales, and then do kind of what the appraiser does or what I would do for a market analysis is find other homes that are similar, just basic similarities. If it's a one-story, two-car garage with a pool, similar age and similar square footage within a mile of the property, and then fill out a chart that is eventually typed up showing clearly how much per square foot the house is sold for, how much they're paying in taxes, how much they're paying in homeowner dues, and then comparing the results. And most of the time, the results showed the PKID property value per square foot was higher and their yearly cost was lower.
What do you mean by their yearly cost?
When I look at the PKID, I'm looking at their taxes, which includes their special tax for maintaining the common areas, open space.
Okay.
And then I looked at the HOA property, how much are they paying in taxes, and how much are they paying in homeowner dues? Totaled that up and then compared that difference.
Okay, so wait a minute. You've got house A that is in a PKID, and it's 2,000 square feet, and it's got a two-car garage, and it's virtually identical to House B. And one of them's in an HOA, and one's in a PKID, and they're within a mile. So you're limiting your search to within a mile. The PKID property is valued higher?
Most of the time it was higher when I averaged out. You know, I wasn't always able to find more than one sale in one of the PKIDs for that particular type of home.
Okay.
And I had to find, you know, at least three or four. I tried to find sales, recent sales within the last 6 months. The more examples I had for PKIDs of similar homes, and the more examples I have of recent sales, the better the data, because there's more homes to look at and more averaging to do. And that takes out the wash of the, well, some of them maybe sold for more because they're remodeled, and this one sold for less because it was on a busy road.
Mm-hmm.
Or wasn't maintained. So when you take a lot of examples and then average it out, that all comes out in the wash anyway.
Okay.
And in most of these examples, it did show that the PKDs were getting more. And I actually drove through the neighborhoods, and I spoke to one lady in one of them, and she said that she actually bought there specifically because there was no HOA.
Okay.
She says she commonly walks in the neighboring community that is the HOA. And she said that that neighborhood is no nicer than her neighborhood.
I believe that. I mean, I know. Okay, so let's say House A is in a PKID and House B is in an HOA. Essentially, they're the same size-wise, you know, number of bedrooms, number of bathrooms, garage, all of that wonderful stuff. Are the taxes essentially the same? Are they taxed at the same rate?
I tried to get information on taxes, but each district is different. I couldn't get the actual, like, how do they come up with the tax for each district of each property? But the taxes tended to be lower. On some of them, they were higher. Like, well, on Madera Park, it's $1,810 for the tax. The homeowners associations were $1,682, $1,610, and then almost $1,500 on two of them.
So this is an annual fee?
Yes. So the PKD was just a little bit more on two of the comps, and it was about $350 more on two of the comps.
So, okay. So, like in Fairfax County, where I live, there's a dollar amount. It's like the value of the property is X. The taxes, but let's say $1.35 per 1,000 assessed value. So there's an assessed value for the houses. So technically, depends on what the county assesses the value at as to what your property taxes are going to be. Is that the same way it's calculated in Arizona?
I think it's calculated the same, but then when I talked to someone that works for the tax department,
mm-hmm.
he said there's a lot of variables that go into play, special taxes for different things, and also people have deductions if they're handicapped or blind, they can get deductions in it. And if they're seniors, they can have a deduction for that. So there are a lot of variables with the taxes.
Oh, so, okay. So it's a little more difficult to determine. Quite often you can just get a better idea if you just go to the taxes, because you've got someone who's sitting there, not that they don't have a vested interest, obviously, they're going to want to jack up everything because that means more income to the county. So if you're in a PKID and you have to pay maintenance to the county for maintaining the common area, that's lower than typically HOAs charge, right?
Yes.
Because in HOAs, you've got management fees, you've got insurance, you've got, God help us, you've got to feed those attorneys, right?
Right.
The sharks that are snapping at everybody's heels there, they want a big chunk of your money. So all of that adds to the cost of an HOA, which means that not everything you're paying for in an HOA goes to the maintenance.
A lot of it does not.
A lot of it does not.
I know that there's isolated cases where someone's happy there's an HOA because maybe their neighbor painted their house pink on their cul-de-sac, and it affects just those houses on that cul-de-sac. But the majority of the people, it's not benefiting when they're paying more money for this. They're living under rules. There are people that get bullied and harassed by their board. There are people that are getting sued by their HOA, whether it's for late dues or not replacing a tree that died or having some weeds in their yard. The real benefit, to me, appears to be that having an HOA gives HOA management companies and HOA attorneys a lot of business, and that's where the biggest benefit is.
So there's nothing in it for the homeowner?
Only if they're the one that's unlucky to live next to the pink house.
And is there no way that they can, I mean, if you can have a covenant, is there no way that they can, they themselves can take care of it? But I have a neighbor who painted his townhouse sort of an aqua, and everybody in the neighborhood got really ticked off. Oh my God, can you see that? I went to him, I mean, he was my next door neighbor. I told everyone, I said, you can't do anything about it because the HOA does not have the authority to do. So I went next door and I said, hey, I love your house. I said, it reminds me of the ocean. Paint some fish and bubbles going up the side of the house. The next day he went out and bought paint and repainted it.
That's all it took, communication from a neighbor to a neighbor.
I just was making fun of him. I said I was going to paint some bright fish on the side of his house with all these bubbles going up. And we just laughed. We just giggled about it, and we laughed, and that was it. He painted his house, and it was all over with.
See how easy that was?
Yes. And it didn't cost any. Well, it cost him another gallon, or cost him more paint. But it, you know, you don't need all of that stuff.
You know, I actually trust the city to spend my HOA money more than I do HOA boards and management companies.
And you've posted pictures of your HOA where things are not being maintained.
No, and I just sold because of it.
Oh, you've sold it?
Yes, I sold. I moved out of there. I just decided I couldn't keep fighting and watching what was going on because I think it's getting worse.
So tell me, your client, what do you do when they say, I don't want an HOA?
You know, we can try to find one that's not, but a lot of times that new construction, newer home is what they really want, so they get stuck with that, with paying that fee. The other thing is, if they want to be in, say, South Scottsdale, the prices are higher, maybe they can only afford a condo. So for them, it's like, well, I either have to move out far out to not be in an HOA, but I really want to be in Scottsdale. But if I can only go up to 150 in Scottsdale, South Scottsdale, then I have to buy a condo. So they have no choice or option. They just have to do it.
So you've been lobbying and you've been talking to the legislature, and you're basically asking them to give you choices, right?
Yeah, I think it would benefit a lot of people that want to just live their life.
And what kind of response are you getting?
I had met with Fred and one legislator a couple weeks ago, and apparently they're not doing anything with it now. From Fred, it sounds like they were interested in investigating it, but at this point, nothing is getting done.
So pretty much it's, you know, business as usual. We're just going to go ahead and rubber stamp everything that comes through. The legislator you talk to, do you get a sense that maybe he or she is pretty much on your side?
I cannot answer that because I'm not sure.
You're not sure. The politicians, usually they'll talk from both sides of their mouth.
He did mention that he owns a condo, and I asked him how his reserve study is, and he said, well, what is reserve study? I said, wow, that's funny that you don't know, because most people don't know, and it's the most important piece of information that, especially for a condominium, that buyers and sellers need to look at.
And he had no idea.
Correct.
He had no idea. Where are you going to take this? I mean, you've done a lot of work, and I know you told me that it was in draft form. You and Fred are continuing to work on this?
Yes, and I think at this point it's education. It's letting people know that there's another option out there, and that hopefully cities will start, counties, municipalities, hopefully they'll start allowing builders to build some communities without an HOA.
Is that what your ultimate goal is to have the options?
Yes.
So who are you going to educate? How are you going to get this out to the people in Arizona?
We haven't talked that much about how we're going to get this out. We are going to post it on HOASavers.com.
Okay.
And I think we are going to mail it out to some, you know, legislators, possibly some news outlets, just because it's such a great idea. And PKIDs have been around here for so long, and I only just recently heard about it.
So it was something that even you didn't know. You're in Scottsdale. PKIDs are in Gilbert, right?
Right. but I work in Gilbert. And I even spoke to an appraiser, and he didn't know about PKIDs.
Is that usually when you sell a house, and they'll tell you what the HOA dues are?
Yes.
Is that sort of separated out in, you know, information-wise? When you buy, supposing I came to Arizona and I said, Jill, find me something that's not in an HOA. So you take me to Gilbert and you find me a house. Are you going to tell me how much I'm going to be paying in PKID fees? Is that on the listing or is that just not information that's available?
Homeowner dues are on the listing, but there's no mention of PKID fees anywhere.
So it's not even on the listing. So when you buy a house, you don't even know about it.
I don't think most realtors know about PKIDs.
So it's that obscure.
Yeah, I only heard about it from Fred.
And so then you went and started doing some research on, what about the older housing in, say, places like Mesa and Tempe and Chandler and Scottsdale and Phoenix? I mean, I used to live in Mesa. I don't think there was a PKID there because, I mean, there was nothing there. It was just private homes. Is there anything similar to that in some of the surrounding areas, surrounding towns?
Fred would know more about that. I believe there's some kind of district maybe in Peoria.
Okay, yeah.
Or some kind of procedure to remove your HOA, and they've got like a backup situation in case that HOA fails.
That's the MIDs, the Maintenance Improvement Districts, which is what he was telling me about yesterday when I talked to him. And that's a backup. We didn't talk about that earlier.
Yeah, I would just like everybody to know about PKIDs and try to get the ability to have some communities built without HOAs. That way the consumer has an option.
What about the real estate, the real estate board? I mean, it's your business. CAI's out there lobbying for all kinds of powers for HOAs. The realtors have got to watch out for their clients. I mean, if I came to you and said, I don't want an HOA, and I want something new, I don't want to be fixing up something old, it's in your interest to make sure that it's in the realtor's interest, basically, to make sure that they have the inventory.
I have made an initial contact with the Association of Realtors.
Okay.
But it hasn't gone anywhere yet because I am asking that they look at this and possibly support some changes so that this can be an option.
Because it would seem to me that they would have an interest in doing that.
You
would think so. What about other agents? Do you ever talk to other agents about it?
I had one agent review the data, and he said he had to read it again.
Mm-hmm.
But he made a comment that he learned a lot about Parkway Improvement District and housing that he had no clue about.
Yeah,
he's a big supporter of it. If a group of realtors could get together here and support this legislation that will help get some positive changes. From creating PKID new construction to having more disclosures and education on realtors regarding reserve studies, having the buyer's advisory discuss what the reserve study is, having some kind of change that says the reserve study info has to be on the front page of the reserve study, that maybe the actual details need to be in the seller's disclosure statement. Buyers shouldn't be surprised when they get hit with special assessments.
Wow, wouldn't that be awesome?
The PKD is a project. Reserve study education is a project. Licensing and regulating HOA management companies is a project. I have examples of why that's a good idea, why it needs to be done. I know that people don't like it sometimes when I talk about it because they don't want it to change. but it's not good for the consumer the way it is. And it all, I also think it's a breach of fiduciary duty to put HOA property managers who are unlicensed and unregulated on our checking and saving accounts in our HOAs.
I so completely agree with you. I still want to know, and I've been asking this question for a million years, is HOA housing a viable form of housing? I don't believe so. I don't believe that it is, and I don't think you're going to be able to fix it. I don't think that no matter all the tweaking that you do, you know, you can massage it and shake it and caress it and do anything you want. It's not going to make a whole lot of difference because you've got a flawed concept to start with. It's not going to go anywhere.
There has to be a way to make it better. And a neutral party, maybe through the city, that's going to get multiple bids and handle it as a business, the financial part of it anyway. Because I think a lot of the problem with HOAs, at least like with my condo, was the financial part and actually doing the work to maintain the property.
Well, I think you've got the financial aspect, and I think the existing ones, they certainly need a lot of adult supervision. But if you want to improve them, I would strip them of all their authority and power. You know, they don't need the power to decide that you cannot have a red car or that, you know, that your flower pot's cracked and therefore they're going to fine you and foreclose non-judicially to collect that fine. I mean, these are so ridiculous. Strip them of that power. Get rid of all of that stuff. It's not going to work. Long term, it's not going
to
work.
Yeah, and most people, it seems most people don't go to their meetings. They don't pay attention. They just want to pay their dues and live their lives. And then the only time they get upset is if they have an issue with their HOA where maybe their condo floods because of negligence of the roof not being maintained or a grading issue being fixed.
But Jill, they told you they didn't want an HOA, so they don't want to go to meetings. They want to be left alone. They want to buy a house and enjoy that house, not get involved in meetings. I mean, that's where this is such it's a flawed concept. They'll tell you it's carefree living, but there's nothing carefree about it.
No, it's more work being part of an HOA because you have to be looking at how your money is being spent. And it's not, and you can't look at just your money. You have to look at the combined money of the whole entire neighborhood.
Where
is it
going?
And if it's $300,000, that's your money. And where is it going?
Yeah. No, you're right.
And, you know, and the new thought I had, and this might be off of PKD topic for a moment, but the fact is if you've got two condos next door to each other, one is maintained, they're at similar price point, but one is maintained and one is severely neglected, not maintained, in poor condition, and you can drive through and you see it. You see it in the roads, the paint, the stucco, the fascia boards, the building signs, the plants. You can tell that the place is bad. The reserve study is bad. It probably is 0% funded at this point. So when the nice community sells their place, when either community has a sale, they usually use a comp out of the neighboring condo. I realize the benefit is for the community that is neglected and in bad repair, they are benefiting off of our comps that are well-maintained.
The higher comps.
Yeah, it's well-maintained, so they're getting more money because it's well-maintained. But the property that's well-maintained is hurt when they're using the comps next door.
Yeah.
So I called the appraisal board yesterday, and she said, you know, if you have a problem on an appraisal in the nice community, you could call the appraiser back and ask him to look at those details on the other community and see if the value can be adjusted. Because if an appraiser is looking at two houses next door to each other and one's in great shape and one's not, one needs $20,000 worth of work and the other doesn't, he's going to make adjustments on that value because of it. But with condos, they're not necessarily doing that.
Yeah.
So you can actually make a good argument. But the other side is that condo that's not being maintained is affecting the values of other condos in the area because their comps are going to be lower.
Good point. Jill, thanks so much for the work. Thanks for joining us. And good luck, and I hope you get somewhere with this. I think you've got a great concept, a great idea, and congratulations.
Thank you, Sue.
Take care. Thanks to everybody for joining us. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.